Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire.
Another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Edwards, and with me, of course, the spell-jamming helm to my hammerhead shipmaster. You put Mr. in the notes, and it's really freaking me out. I corrected it in route, but I think, I don't know, was this a test, Robert Lundgren?
I was seeing if you read whatever's put in there.
No, I am not Ron Burgundy. Yes, the spell-jamming helm to my hammerhead shipmaster, Mr. Robert Lundgren. How are you doing?
You did it again.
What?
You're like, Master, Mister.
What, did I say both?
Yes!
I don't know, I'm so tired. I slept like 2 hours last night.
I'm well, Jonathan. How are you?
borderline exhaustion, but that's okay.
Word.
Well, as always, before we get this show started, we always like to say a big thank you to all of our patrons over at Patreon. You guys help us keep the lights on, and we appreciate it. And if you want to help, there's tons of new goodies that you get as a Patreon subscriber.
Yeah, the episode and the outtakes, which I really need to work on. I've got one ready to go. I just have to finish it. But it's been a couple weeks, Jonathan. It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah, it has for both of us, without a doubt. But we're back.
Yes.
And as always, we're going to get started with our off-the-shelf segment. And in this segment, we talk about all the cool, fun, geeky stuff that we've managed to get off of our shelves and onto our tables, TVs, and, into our hot little hands. So, why don't we get started? Because both of us have sad little lists, even though it's been like 3 weeks since the last time we recorded.
I can add to mine, sir.
I cannot, sadly. So, you, sir, have watched some movies and TV. And one of them I'm kind of envious about.
So they released the final 5 or 6 episodes of The Tick on Amazon, and quite good. Thumbs up from me. Go watch that. Not right now. After this podcast.
Are you sure? Because I can go right now.
No, you should not go right now. I need you to co-host. Unless it's ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Welcome to The Robert Show. I'm your host, Robert. With me, as always, is nobody. All right, let's talk about me.
I think that silence says it all. Moving right along. So finish The Tick. Okay, I will make sure to catch up on that. I've been meaning to watch that, and I just haven't had a chance.
It's 12 episodes, and they're in a half hour, so it's pretty easy to, like, just plow through.
See, here's the problem. I do watch a fair amount of TV, but what I do is I watch things that I've watched before, because it kind of helps to keep me company while I'm working, so I'll put it on in the background. But if I watch something that I've never watched before, I'm going to give it my attention, and so I can't do that. So, like, I've been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I got through season one. I've watched it before, so it's not a big deal. Although I do have to say, I forgot, you know, how enjoyable that show is. It's just fun.
It's amazing how bad that show is, and then they do the Tracks episode, and all of a sudden, like, the quality takes a huge leap forward.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, a huge leap forward.
I see here you've been watching a lot of Power Rangers.
No, I watched the Power Rangers film, new one.
That looks so bad.
Oh, it was actually somewhat enjoyable. Like,
was it so bad it was good again?
No, it was actually, like, kind of okay. Like, it was kind of a dark, gritty reboot of the Power Rangers. Did it need to exist? Were there things in it that were dumb? Yes, all of it was dumb. But you know what? I watched it with my kid, and she liked it, and we had a good time. And they had some shout outs to the original show, and I didn't care. It was a good time. Would I have been upset if I paid for it? I don't know, but it was on Amazon Prime, and it was worth a viewing. I had a good time. And the same goes with Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets. It's
is that
not
on Amazon Prime?
It is.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to make that something I watch the next time I have some free time.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's let me rephrase. It's not good, but it's fun to watch. It's like watching Tron Legacy. That was, I had a good time taking it in. I don't think I would say it was like an amazing film.
But it doesn't have Zen Jeff Bridges.
No. But it has the lady who played the Enchantress in Suicide Squad, which when I recognized her, I'm like, oh, that's what she looks like when she's not all caked with dirt and looking evil.
I, too, watched a questionable movie.
If it's the movie I think is here, I'm not even going to say it's questionable, sir. I question your judgment in even watching it, and I wonder how you got your hands on it, because if you bought it, I really question your judgment.
No, I did not buy it. So let me set this up. My wife and I had a weekend without kids recently. All the kids were at other parents' houses, et cetera, et cetera. So we had this rare evening of just us, but we were both exhausted, so we decided to go to Redbox, and here's the problem. My wife loves reality TV. I loathe it. My wife likes movies like Bad Moms, and I just don't. You know, I prefer something a bit more dramatic or a fun comic book movie. So we always struggle to find something that we can both tolerate. But one of the few genres that we both enjoy is disaster films. And I love me a good disaster movie, especially if it's over the top and silly. As it turns out, I found where my limit lies, and Geostorm is that limit. That movie is so bad, it's just plain bad. Oh, it's horrible in every way, Robert. It's physically painful to watch.
I don't know, man. My bar is set pretty low. I have seen Deathbed to the Bed That Eats. And if you have not seen that, you do not know how low movie viewing can go.
But you have to understand, this was just made. This was made recently. It made $220 million, Robert.
But Jonathan, it wasn't made recently. They shelved that thing for 2 or 3 years because they knew how bad it was, and then they finally released it kind of because they had to.
So, Jessica, my wife, is not what you would call a movie connoisseur, right? She doesn't take a movie apart like you and I do. So I knew how bad the special effects were, which I had already noted, when she leans over to me in the middle of the movie and says, "These special effects are terrible." So, nice. You know, that just kind of tells you everything that you need to know. And here's the funny thing. She's watching this thing and she starts crying at the end because it's just like, I don't know. She says she cried at Armageddon, too. So I guess that's where we're setting our bar. I was crying, too, but for very different reasons, mostly because it was painful. It was just painful. It was so bad. Robert, it was so bad.
Oh, but I like bad movies. Am I going to have to watch this now?
No. Because you know I love me some bad movies, too. And Geostorm was just terrible.
All right. If it's free, I'll watch it.
But I managed to salvage the night, because the other movie that we rented was Hitman's Bodyguard, which is hysterical.
I do not know that film.
Okay, so it's Ryan Reynolds and Samuel L. Jackson. Sam Jackson is a professional hitman, and he is being protected by Ryan Reynolds because he's going to go and be a witness at a big international trial. Gary Oldman plays a Russian bad guy. And Sam Jackson is Sam Jackson.
Right.
And like Ryan Reynolds is Ryan Reynolds. And the two are a perfect foil of each other. And here's the thing. It's the feel-good hit of the year. It's got a love story. It's part romance.
Do Sam Jackson and Ryan Reynolds look into each other's eyes longingly and have a forbidden love that they can't share?
No, nothing like that. But they've got the bromance going, and then they're talking about that romance because they've both got the loves of their lives. And I can't even explain it, man. The movie works so much better than it has any right to work. It was so much fun. It was stupid fun. And, you know, Ryan Reynolds is basically just shy of Deadpool in his flippancy, you know?
Well, that's just Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you've got Sam Jackson being a foil with his MF for this, MF for that. So it's amazing. It's amazing. I had so much fun. It was hysterical.
Okay.
And then top it all off, it's actually got a really good chase scene with physical car effects, not CG. And it's fun. It's got good action in it.
Speaking of good action, so we talked about Sky High a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, we did.
And I've been dredging out all the old DVDs while I was unpacking, and I found my copy of that, and I'm like, you know, I haven't watched this in a while, so I watched it with Eowyn, and she enjoyed it, but I forgot how good the stunt work was in that movie.
Yeah, because it did a lot of physical stuff, if I recall correctly, right?
Yeah, like, they throw people into walls, and there's this stunt where some guy's, like, holding on to something on the ceiling, and he falls onto his back on a desk, ends up bent over backwards with his head in a trash can, and then he goes from that and sort of somersaults over on his back onto the floor. And I was like, that would have hurt. They had to pay a stuntman to do that, because this was practical effects.
Yeah, I have very, very, very fond memories of that movie. Like, that movie would just hit on all fronts.
Yeah. Sky High. Very, very underrated movie. I watched it, and I'm like, this, you know, like, it seems like it would be a better movie now, because it works better now than it did back then, you know, because I and it's funny because like one of the bad guys is a speedster like the Flash, which is funny because the Caitlin Snow on the Flash is in that movie as a different character, obviously. But they do a lot of the Flash gags that they do on that show. But they, you know, this other movie like did them first. And I was like, oh, that's cute.
Nice, nice. Well, I did watch one other movie, speaking of superheroes, and that was I finally had a chance to sit down and watch Justice League.
Oh, nice. I've been wanting to do that. I just haven't had the time.
Okay, so it's the best... okay, no, that's not true. Wonder Woman is the best DC movie. This is the best of the multi-character movies.
Well, it's the only one, right?
No, that's not true. Batman versus Superman. I mean, it's right in the title.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's the best of the... It's, I guess, second best of the DC films. Definitely not as good as Wonder Woman, but it's the first time that, you know, like Wonder Woman, what made it so effective is that it's got such great heart, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. This is the first time that the grimdark universe is given a little bit of levity with some comedy from the characters, and it's enjoyable, and it's absolutely enjoyable.
Yeah. I was talking to a friend of the show, Mike Hall, the other day. And he was telling me that it's really glaringly apparent when Zach was directing stuff and when Joss was directing stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is painfully apparent. You can draw very clear lines in the style, the dialogue, everything about it. I mean, it's a vastly different film.
Weird.
But whatever. I mean, like it was enjoyable. Still got some of my favorite characters. I like what they're doing with some of the characters. I hope that this wasn't the end of that universe. I do hope that it continues, because I think they're finally starting to find their way out of the grimdark and into something a little more balanced.
Well, we'll find out, because Aquaman is currently the only movie on that docket at the moment. And
Wonder Woman 2.
And Wonder Woman 2. But I have a feeling that if Aquaman does badly, I think that'll be the last nail. And if Aquaman is good and does okay, they might limp it along a little bit further. And I don't think they'll not make Wonder Woman 2. I just think Wonder Woman 2 will just be the only thing in that universe going forward, and they will go other directions after that.
Yeah, no, agreed. I mean, it's been a pretty brutal road for those films. If they don't manage to pull a Marvel with Aquaman, I think you're right. We're probably going to see a reboot. Well, that's it for movies. How about, I see you got a little bit of reading done.
Yeah. So I mentioned the last time that I had a Kickstarter shipping while it arrived. It was the Midgard campaign setting and the Hero's Handbook for 5th edition. And I read through the Hero's Handbook pretty completely. I got into the campaign setting a little bit, but then I got distracted with other things, and I need to finish that up. But yeah, it's by Kobold Press. It's an interesting campaign setting. I can't quite put my finger on if I like it, but I don't know if I like it or if it's just like, oh, that's fun, because it's got a problem I've seen in a lot of D&D settings, where D&D settings lately especially have like sort of decided that it needs to have like every race ever, you know? So it's like there's, I think, a good 12 additional ones in that book, and it just is like how many riffs off of, you know, intelligent things that you can be a character of do you actually need, because it gets a little ridiculous. And they talk about it in a sidebar in the book that, like, if you're doing a thing in an area, you should just use you should only allow the racial options in that area, you know? So if you're doing something in the Viking area, you should only allow humans. It's humans, dwarves, possibly raven folk, because they are the messengers of Odin, and the trollkin, which are, you know, people and trolls having babies, which, ew, because it's D&D trolls and they're funguses. But and I get that, but it's just, yeah, there's just a lot of races, and it's just really weird. And I know that setting got its start in 4th edition D&D, and it really, really shows, because part of like 4th edition D&D's mandate was anything ever printed ever you had to put in. So I recognize like all of the races from 4th edition D&D because they're in there. They even have their own version of Warforged, because they call them Gearforged, because they're totally not Warforged. And yeah, I just don't know how I feel about it. It's really obvious reading it that basically it's based off of a campaign setting that the Wolfgang Barr, the head of the company, had. And it's very obvious where those campaign settings were, because he obviously had one up in the Viking area. He obviously had one in this city called Zobek, which is kind of like a free city that's sort of the center of the world. And he obviously had one in this Egyptian area. And then obviously the Zobek one was first, because he sort of surrounded Zobek with like weirdness. And then he's like, oh, I'll do the Nordic one, and the Nordic one will be north of that. So all the weirdness that's to the north of Zobek will be to the south of the Nordic people. it has a lot of interesting twists, like gnomes in that setting. They're under a curse by Baba Yaga. As long as they stay in this one forest that they have protected with packs they've made with demons, so they have to sacrifice people every so often, Baba Yaga can't get them. And one of the ways they get out of the forest to go interact with other people is they make red caps that have these mushrooms in them, which are from the forest, and thus protect them from Baba Yaga. And thus, gnomes in that setting actually have red caps, and then they also sacrifice people to demons, which I thought was cute.
Yeah, I'm down. I think it's adorbs.
Yeah, so I don't know. Like, the jury's out, because I was like, oh, I kind of want to set something around here, because I want to get this, like, Eastern European, because there's a Vampire Kingdom vibe, but then everything in that area was not stuff I liked. And I was like, ah, blah, and so I'm like, I have to read this whole book now. I can't just focus on the things I think should be cool. I actually have to figure out what the designer likes, and forcing me to read a 400-page rule book I paid for. How dare you?
You poor thing. I feel so terrible for you.
I know, I know.
Well, I'll be doing some reading real soon, because my top secret shipped.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Nice, nice.
Yeah, I may have sent you a screenshot when I got really excited. I'm sorry if that made you sad.
It doesn't, because, like, for me, the spy genre, like, the bar right now is Knights Black Agents, so that's what I'm going to compare it to, and it's going to be a tough bar. That's a high bar, sir, because just under that bar is Delta Green, and I love me the Delta Green, too, so we will see, sir, we will see.
I think we will. We will, definitely. But that's coming later this week. Now, you did have a chance, it looks like. You got a chance to do some RPGing with Eowyn?
Yes, twice. Two times. My roomie and my wife and my daughter were playing Keep on the Borderlands. I've talked about it in the past. So we have had two sessions. Any new insights with children in gaming, I can tell you, with role-playing gaming and six-year-olds, is try to keep it to about an hour or two, because their mind starts to wander after that.
That's fair.
And,
I think that's fair.
And make sure you engage them. And yeah, it's I think she was having a better time with Savage Worlds, because me and mommy were both in that one, and she really liked us being goofy with her, and me being the DM, I don't know if she likes. But the characters are fun. So we have Langkirk Elf's son. He's a half-elf pirate cleric. That's my roomie. We have Silver Rose, who is a pony warlock, and yes, it's a pony from Pony Finder, because my wife decided we were going to use that book, because we paid for it, so she's going to use it. And then my daughter is playing Violet, who is a ninja scientist, a.k.a. a rogue sage.
I like it.
And I like it, because she inadvertently stumbled upon, like, a fantasy trope, because you know how, like, fantasy is full of people who have, like, normal-sounding names, but then they spell them really weird because it's, you know, it's fantasy. You can't have, like, a normal-looking name. It has to be have extra vowels and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, she's learning how to, you know, do sentences and you know, whatever. And so what they teach her right now is to just go for it, you know? Like, if you're going to write a sentence down, just do your best and, you know, figure it out later. So she spelled her character's name is Violet, and she spelled it V-I-L-Y-I-T. And I'm like, that is a perfect fantasy way to spell Violet. I approve. So, yeah, yeah. I was very happy about that. But, yeah, we're having fun. They fought some lizard men, and they've been hanging around the Keep on the Borderlands. So that's been good.
I have been working on a module for the Genesis RPG system. I've been reading through the core rulebook and kind of creating a world for it.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm having a lot of fun. I am basing it heavily on what minis I have lying around from recent board games. So there are going to be lots of vampires in it.
Ooh, fun.
All right, well, let's move on to video games, Robert. And I see a lot of Dragon's Quest continuing on in your days, and you text me about it pretty religiously.
I think I sent this to you earlier, but I'm going to go out and say it. If Dragon Quest V manages to land its ending, which I don't have a lot of hope of because Dragon Quest IV did not land its ending, but if it manages to land its ending, I'm going to say it's the best JRPG I've ever played. And no joke, even though the graphics are terrible by today's standards and the storyline is vague and whatever, it's just the theme of this one especially is all about family. And so at the beginning of it, you heard us talk about it before, you know, you're that 6-year-old kid, and then in the middle of it you're 16, and then by the end of the game you're 30 years old. And in the course of that, you get married, you have kids, and it is like sticking me in the feels routinely. And I'm just like not even seeing it coming, man. Like, I'm not even seeing it coming. And it's just brutal. And I'm like, I don't know how I got all these feels for a JRPG that's, you know, on my iPad. But I do. I'm going to explain to you a story now, which has come full circle. So from where I left off, my little sociopath, I guess he ate mushrooms or something, because he took a magical staircase, built itself in his basement, and he took a trip to fairyland like you do. And yeah, he learned how to pick.
That's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. And he learned how to pick locks there, which is good, I guess. You know, he picks locks in fairyland because, you know, yeah. But then, so the very, very end of the game, the very, very end of the first part of the game, where you transition from child to adult, you get called to a nearby kingdom where the prince there is a spoiled brat, and the king there thinks your dad's a bang up guy, and he knows there's like some sort of plot against his son. So he basically hires your dad as a bodyguard, and thus you have to play with the spoiled prince. And you're playing with him, and while you're playing with him, he gets kidnapped. You tell your dad runs off. You track down where the kidnappers went by yourself, and you go up there. And while you're in there, you find your dad, and he's like, "Oh my gosh, you made it this far. I ran off without you, and I realized you weren't still with me, but I had to go. But you got here all by yourself." And there's this moment where he's like, "You know what, son? I'm really proud of you. Like, you got all the way here. You figured it out all by yourself. Like, you know, you're growing up, and I got to remember that." So, and I'm like, "Oh, that's like nice. I'm getting parental approval. And what's this weird feeling I have in my chest? Why do I give a crap about, you know, virtual dad's approval of me? I don't know, but it was getting me somewhere." So he's like, "Okay, well, you know what? You're doing good. Why don't you lead the way, son?" I'm like, "Oh, I got dad's approval. That's amazing." And so, like, you walk out, you start going around, and then I got into a fight, like you do, and we fought the things off, and of course, he was wrecking, and then, of course, what happens at the end of that fight? He goes, "Wow, son, you fought really good. You've really learned how to poke people with your bamboo stick," or whatever I was using at the time. "Here's a healing spell." And I'm like, "Oh, we're back to that." So you save the prince, and more guards come, and your dad's like, "Son, I'll hold them off. You get the prince out of here. I can trust you." And I'm like, "Yeah, dad can trust me." And so I run out with the prince, and then like the second in command of the big bad shows up and wrecks you, just takes you apart. And you're lying there like half dead, and then your dad comes up, and he's like, "Oh, you're here to get your sons back." And then he calls in his two goons, and then, you know, your dad fights the two goons, and your dad takes the two goons apart like they're not even there. It's amazing. And I'm like, "Yeah, you go get him, dad." And then the bad guy picks your character up and puts a scythe to your neck and says, like, "Okay, so we're going to do that again. But this time you're not going to touch my boys, or I'll chop your kid's head off in front of you." And then it goes back into a combat screen, and the two goons are there, and they start hitting your dad. And every time your dad's turn comes up in the turn-based combat, it just says he takes the abuse. He takes a deep breath. And you get to watch your dad get beaten to death in front of you in the combat screen.
Wow.
And it takes forever, because these guys do like high 20s, low 30s of damage every hit. And your dad has 450 hit points. It takes forever. And you just
get to watch. That's a pretty brutal scene, man.
Yes, it is. And I'm like, oh, what are they doing to my dad? So after they're done, your dad's like crawling, right? And he's like, son, your mother's still alive. You have to find her. And then the bad guy's like, "Oh, you're still talking?" And he summons up this like gigantic fireball and reduces your dad to ashes with it. Just obliterates him. And I'm like, "Whoa." And then the goons are like, "Well, what should we do with these children?" And he's like, "Oh, well, we'll send them to work as slaves in the temple." And then I'm like, "Oh my God, that's dark. I just got sold to slavery." And then the screen goes black. And then it says, 10 years later, and it picks up with you enslaved building a temple to this like crazy apocalypse cult. And I'm like, "Wow, that was kind of intense."
It's pretty nuts, man.
So then you get married, and your marriage options, I guess, are kind of funny, because so there's Bianca, who I call the Al Bundy, because she's a little girl that you go to the haunted house with at the beginning, and that's all she talks about. So like, she obviously peaked right there. So, you know, she like sits there on the couch with her hand in her pants, is like, "Oh yeah, did I ever tell you about that time I went and fought in a haunted house with that one guy I barely knew? Yeah." And then there's Lena, who's the nice one, but she's obviously in love with a different guy, and apparently if you end up marrying her, like, that guy's always kind of around. And it's
that's
like
creepy.
Oh,
yeah, that's just creepy.
And then there's Lena's sister Deborah, who's freaking insane. She's like, she's the crazy one. So I'm like, okay, so my choices are Al Bundy, the crazy one, or the one who's at least having an emotional affair, if not an actual one. I guess I'll pick Deborah, because she'll at least be amusing. So yes, I married the curly haired crazy one, and she calls me her servant, not her husband, typically, which is fun. But here's the best part. So after you get married, your wife has kids, and then your wife gets kidnapped and she hides the babies, so the bad guys don't know that you had the babies. And then you climb up to this tower, and that son of a bitch who had your dad killed's up there, and he turns you and your wife to statues.
He's just all cuddles.
Yes. So then he leaves you there. And then these two guys that you find like earlier in these other adventurers, they come up there and they find your statues. They're like, oh man, like most of the treasure's gone, but maybe we could sell these statues. So they drag your statues away. And then the next scene's at an auction house, and they auction off your statues to different people, and they separate you. And I'm like, this is really starting to piss me off in a way that's like I'm feeling actual like anger towards the bad guy here. Like, he beat my dad to death in front of me, and then he sold him as a statue. So then this guy buys you.
I feel like you should have said spoiler alert at the beginning of this.
Shut up. Shut up. It came out in 1994. Spoilers are over. And the remake on the DS came out in 2006. We are well beyond spoilers here. So he takes you to his garden, and then he props you up in his garden because your statue's good luck. And you find out that dude has a baby that's like the same age as your babies. And it cuts to those parents and that baby growing up. And I'm realizing it's like your babies are growing up while you're a statue, but you're watching this other baby grow up in front of you as a statue. I'm like, that's kind of messed up. So then, like, a whole bunch of time passes, things happen, and then your dad's, like, buddy, and he's got these two kids with him, they find you, and they bring you back to life as not a statue. And it's your kids. They're 8 years old. 8 years have passed, and you're a statue. And you're hanging out with your kids. And I was like, wow, that's kind of nuts. So I had my kids in, like, my wagon for a while, getting experience, because they're only, like, level 5. And I got him up, and it was awesome, Jonathan. And here's where we're coming full circle. I brought him out, and I'm like, you know what? I think the kids are level enough that I can take them out to fight monsters like you do in a fantasy world. So I take them out. We run around. We get into combat. They fight. You know, they do their things. They have cool spells. I'm like, oh, the kids did pretty good. So after we're done with that combat, I'm like, okay, you know what? The kids did pretty good. That was a pretty interesting combat, but they got hurt a little bit. Here's a healing spell.
Nice.
But yeah, oh, that game, man, like, yeah, like the kids, and like there's every so often the kids, you can talk to your kids in certain parts, and there's these references they make occasionally that they don't really know you because, you know, 8 years, and it's like it's messed up, and they like want you to be proud of them, but they also don't know you. And it's just, it's written so well. And what they're nailing is the little stuff, you know, because the big stuff is, you know, just dumb, you know, 16-bit JRPG stuff. But it's those little things, you know, and it's just they get under your skin. And it's just, you know, I used to not complain about Dragon Age 2, you know, because they were trying something with this whole family business in that game. And that made my opinion of that game go down, because this game that, you know, had 10 years on it nailed it. Like, it nailed all of the stuff that Dragon Age 2 was like struggling to try to grasp. And this stupid little 16-bit JRPG got it. For games that try to do that and fail, like, that's on them. Because this game did it ages ago. And it's so good, Jonathan. And as a dad, it really gets to you, you know, because there's that whole thing of you're a kid and it's like, am I treating my kids this way? Are we getting in fights and I'm always giving them a healing spell? Am I being a helicopter parent? And it made me think of that. And then there's the whole getting married middle act thing and blah. And then like when you meet your kids again, like, yeah, there's like hanging out with your kids and the things they say to you. And it's just like things little kids say, except, you know, through the fantasy lens of like, you know, let's go kill a golem. But yeah, it's just, it's so good, Jonathan. I'm like, and if it nails the ending, if it can just stick the ending, it's going to be so good.
Well, I'll tell you what, I will make this the game that I play after I finish Final Fantasy X.
Yeah, it's $15 on the iTunes store, man. You can't
That's
go
not bad at all. That's not bad no. at all. And I do have to say, you've got my interest peaked.
Yeah, no, like, Jonathan, seriously, as a dad, this game just sticks you occasionally when you're not even expecting it. you're just sitting there, it's like, yeah, I got to level up and I got this new thing. Oh, I'll press the button to see what my kids say. And then they say something and it just kind of like gets to you. And you're like, oh, man, that's because you can imagine one of your kids saying it to you, obviously, you know, because there's a boy and a girl. So you got one or the other. And, you know, and every time the girl says something kind of like, you know, where she doesn't really know you all that well, because it happened a couple times. I was just imagining Eowyn saying that to me, like, hurt. It hurt my dad, my dadness inside me. So, yeah, good game. Good game. I like it.
Awesome. Well, it's on my list. It's on my list.
Yes. And I decided what to do about my blimp in Minecraft, because, you know, don't want the symbology that was on the Hindenburg. I think it's appropriate. I'm putting United Federation of Planets stuff on it.
Nice. I like it. I think that's appropriate.
Yeah, and I might put a giant Spock on the side. I found this really cute 8-bit Spock, and it's too big for where the flag should be, but I'm like, a giant 8-bit Spock on the side, I think that would work.
Very cool. Very cool. I like it. All right. Well, I think that gets us pretty much through video games.
Whoa. You didn't play any video games?
I played a little bit. I played more Battlefield 1 because I'm just in love with that game. And then I did have a chance to play just a little bit of Sea of Thieves.
Man, you really haven't done anything. You'll have to play more of Sea of Thieves and then give me your opinion. I'm curious.
I will. I have not played enough other than to say that it is enjoyable, but it does not hold your hand at all. And so unless you know somebody that knows what's going on, it can be a little bit frustrating at first.
All right, Jonathan. So are we there? Is it Board Gameville?
I think we have officially gotten to Board Gameville.
All right. I'm opening the list.
Had an evening. Dale and Cohen and April all came over, and we sat down, and we had a chance to play some more Custom Heroes, which, of course, is that card creation game that I told you about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, trick-taking and card creation, and it's super, super fun. Then we sat down and played a couple of rounds of Steam Court. And this is one that you get to take off the list. So Steam Court, also a trick-taking game. And it's kind of interesting because everybody gets assigned a role, and that role determines who goes first. And it determines the order that you go around the table. And then at the end of every round, you determine a new order based on how quickly you dump all the cards out of your hand. So the first one out is then the new number one, which is the queen. And then you go down from there all the way down to, we played with 5 people. Supports up to 12 people.
Oh, wow. It's one of those.
And everybody has a different role, and that role gives you an individual power. And it's all very well balanced. And it's kind of interesting because as you slide around the table taking the different roles, it gives you a different kind of dynamic and way of playing the game every time. So it's really genuinely interesting. So Steam Court ended up being quite a lot of fun. Everybody enjoyed it, which is really, really cool.
All right. Anything else?
And then we also had a chance to play some Seven Wonders. And let me tell you, Seven Wonders with 5 people is sublime.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is.
I had forgotten how much I enjoy that game. It is just so good. And I had my best performance ever. 80 points.
Whoa.
Yeah. I blew it up. It was amazing. I had a drop-dead gorgeous round. The once-in-a-lifetime, everything came together. I got the perfect cards, and I had perfect synergy. Like, and there was not an action wasted. And then it was Dale's birthday, so we all went over to his house after surprising him and potentially scaring maybe 1 or 2 years off the end of his life. We got to play a bunch of pinball games and arcade games because we had it at Pinballs, which is a local business here that has pinball games from every era of the pinball regime, including modern, and a variety of different arcade games. And afterwards,
Let you guys know the scope of this, the pinballs that I'm assuming you went to, which is the one up by you, it took over, I think, what was like a Circuit City or some sort of store that size. It's big.
Yeah, it took over a department store.
Yeah, it's big.
And that's just one of 3 locations.
It's the big one, though.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. The one down south, south of the river, is pretty big, too.
I haven't been to the one south. I've been to the middle one, which
was
their first one.
It's oddly creepy. It's like there was this building that happened to look like a castle with a dragon over it, and then they took it over. But it's nice. Kind of old. I don't know. It's a creepy building.
Is it something you'd see in a Scooby-Doo episode? The old abandoned castle factory?
Yeah, kind of. Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. That is exactly what it is.
Nice.
Yeah, after that, we all went over to his house and we played some Secret Hitler with a full regime of people. And Secret Hitler is just so much fun with a good group.
Yes, it is.
And it's just like, I really genuinely don't really generally go for that hidden role game. It's just not something that it's not something I'm generally interested in. I see the draw, and I'm glad they pull so many players into it, and I will gladly play it because it's still fun to play with other people. But it's not certainly the type of game I would normally reach for first. But Secret Hitler has just such clever little twists to the mechanics that it just makes it so much fun to play. I just genuinely enjoy playing that game. So that was it for board games, unfortunately. But that is not the end of everything that I've been doing, because I've been reading rules and I've started to build things because the day has come, Robert.
Is this why you had vampires for Genesis?
No, that's actually something different.
Oh my. Okay, go. What is
Star Wars Legion is upon us.
Oh, my lord.
Oh, indeed. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. So the models come in loose in bags. They're not fully built. And here's just the really clever part. It's very obvious that they were built with painting in mind because they are broken down into some very core components. And it's exactly where you would want to get with a brush. And they're all designed so that they dry fit nicely. So you can put them together and hold them together for things like priming. And they won't fall apart on you. But you can very easily pop them out after they're primed and get to painting all the individual components. So like most stormtroopers, you know, they would normally have their arms crossed across their front because they're firing a blaster rifle, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so both of the arms are generally separate components that just lock into place with a good dry fit. And then you can prime the whole model and then pop out the arms, paint the arms separately from the rest of the stormtrooper, be able to get at all those, you know, the waistline and the armpits and stuff like that, where you would have the color variation so easily, and then pop them back together. They're just really well designed, and they're designed with painting in mind, and I really just appreciate that.
Have you put together a Games Workshop model?
I have. And they do a lot of the same stuff.
Okay, good.
But, you know, this is contrary to other, you know, other kind of board games where the minis are in a single component. And so it makes painting.
Yeah, this is a miniature battle game. So yeah,
it is.
They can assume a certain level here that they can't assume in other types of games. You know, like,
and the rules are really they're very streamlined. There's not a lot of cards, not a ton of tokens. The movement is really interesting. So movement of units is based around the concept of a leader, right? The leader has all of his little units around him, and all measurement is based off of the leader. But once you move the leader with the one measurement, as long as they are within one measuring tool's length of the leader, you can just move all your guys that are moving with him as a group, just zip them right on up there. You don't have to do individual measurement.
Okay, cool.
So that makes it go quick, you know?
Yeah, no, that's good.
Then during combat, individual units can peek out and become basically targeted and an easier target to hit. And terrain rules will apply differently if they're able to be seen, et cetera, et cetera. So there's you know, the combat and the movement rules are separated from one another in that respect. And it's kind of interesting because it makes for a really engaging combat game, but you can easily move your guys around the table, which is nice.
Nice.
Here's one of the cool things that Fantasy Flight did. They borrowed a concept out of Armada, which is really neat. And that's the concept of momentum. And so vehicles move with momentum. And so on their base is not a perfect circle. There's a little notch in the front and a little notch in the back. And the measuring tool fits into that notch.
Right, right. Yeah, like,
The measuring tool, it has kinks in it, just like the measuring tool in Armada.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, different vehicles move different lengths and different numbers of kinks to the left and right. And that's kind of interesting because at the end of the move, they're going to be facing a specific direction, which is kind of neat because that means that they have momentum on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just it's a neat thing to add to the land vehicles. It makes them kind of swing around. An exaggerated version of this would be the way the Warthog slides around in Halo.
Yeah, well, and vehicles in a lot of other minigames, they don't do that. They just sort of start and stop on a dime, and they're supposed to be, like, always moving, but I like the notion that you can't, like, necessarily just sort of jam it in, you know, exactly where you want it.
Especially because if any of the vehicles go off the side of the board at all, they're gone. They're gone. They're considered destroyed. And it's also kind of cool because you really have to plan out moves. So part of the core box, of course, is some stormtroopers on speeder bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got terrain on the board and you're not planning out how those speeder bikes are moving, you could clip into the terrain, taking damage or potentially destroying yourself.
Nice.
So it's neat, you know, it's really, really neat. It adds another layer of kind of a brain puzzle and that you have to think ahead for your vehicles because their movement is going to be heavily influenced. So far, all I've done is read the rules. I haven't had a chance to play a game yet. The models are beautiful. The scale's really big, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And since it's in one of my favorite franchises, that totally makes me happy. I'm really looking forward to getting this on the board. I really, really am.
Anything else, sir?
I do have to report that you have to add something to the list. And it's the reason why I have all those vampire minis. My Kickstarter for Vampire Hunters has come. And it's pretty cool. It's kind of think And this is not at all the way the mechanics work, but, you know, it's a co-op game, so it's Zombicide with vampires.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's some really neat mechanics with, you know, what happens during the day and what happens at night and things like that. And it's fully co-op, which I appreciate, which is awesome. That makes it totally fun for me. So I haven't had a chance to dig into the rule book yet. It looks awesome. The monster designs are really neat. So I'm in a happy place.
I dig it, sir. I dig it. And you will certainly let us know, because I am curious about that game.
I will.
Okay.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the off-the-shelf segment.
Hold up. We need the tally. The tally, as it stands. Steam Court was not on the list, sir, so we added Steam Court, Star Wars Legion, and Vampire Hunters, and I'm adding Star Wars Legion because you talked about it, and it's on your shelf currently, so you need to play it.
That's fair. I didn't realize Steam Court wasn't on there. It should have been. I apologize.
Yep, well, there you go. So it is now removed, so no harm, no foul. But yes, that brings your grand total of the day up to +2 onto the list.
Yeah, it's been a bad week. And we'll be back in just a moment with our Wisdom of Crowds segment.
Do you have a tabletop, board game, miniature game, or RPG that you're going to release for retail?
Or do you have an upcoming tabletop Kickstarter that you're about to launch?
We would love to interview you for a future episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast.
Send us an email to fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com to schedule an interview. And welcome back. It is now time for our Wisdom of Crowds, our bi-weekly tabletop news segment. And we're getting into that time of year where the news is getting a little bit bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
And this first one is ginormous.
Called it. I thought this was coming. I could smell it.
Did you put it in your predictions?
No.
What's that big glass of disappointment taste like? Oh!
Hold on. Like old coffee.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. Tell us all about it.
Pathfinder 2 is coming. They're going to have a playtest at Gen Con 2018, where they will be selling print copies, which you can also order through your local FLGS. And they will have it for free as PDFs on the internet, I'm assuming at a similar time. And yeah, it's pretty big. I've been kind of keeping an eye on what they're changing, and there's a lot. Like, they're getting rid of that third edition style iterative attacks. You just, you know, if you take an attack action, you just get one attack. But here's the trick. Imagine this, Jonathan, in combat, you get three actions. So you could move, take an attack, move, or if you're standing right next to an enemy, you can attack. And then spells, depending on how awesome the spell is, they will either take one, two, or possibly even three actions to complete. So yeah, they're messing with the action economy, they're messing with proficiency, they're really messing with a lot of the classes. It's a pretty big overhaul, and it looks to be doing that thing I thought Pathfinder 2 would do, which is, they know full well that 5th edition D&D is kind of like the rules light version of D&D, so they're going to be kind of the miniatures crunchy, Pathfinder-y, shall we say, version of, you know, a more rules light D&D, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So there's a pretty good thread over on the End World about what they are changing. I will link it on the show notes, but yeah, no, it's coming. And I'm not a Pathfinder guy. I never played a game of it. I don't even own any of the books anymore. But you know what? I'll be reading the heck out of this because, you know, it's Pathfinder. You know, it's the other big name in the fantasy thing. And it'll be interesting because now we've reached this golden point where the rule set that, you know, it's all evolved from have started to diverge. And it'll be interesting to see what things are similar, what things they've straight up stolen from 5th edition, and where they're going to chart their own course. So it'll be interesting.
Indeed.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Jonathan? Pathfinder 2?
You know, I don't know. I'm split, right? I enjoy Pathfinder, but as I have evolved as an RPG player, I find myself liking narrative non-crunchy systems just a bit more. That's why I'm so enamored with 5th edition. So I just wonder if it's going to be a little too crunchy for my personal taste. That said, I do find the love and care given to that Pathfinder universe amazing. I mean, they built a great universe. And
that's one thing they say they're going to definitely do. They're going to have more of that Pathfinder world that they created, like, baked into the rule book.
See, I think that's great. And that's what was missing from the first one.
Yeah, I agree.
I think they're heading in the right direction. I will be curious and eagerly will read and purchase the rules. And I guess we'll see where it goes from there, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe we'll do a dive of it sometime after Gen Con, after we've digested it.
I would not be opposed. I would not be opposed. And now we're going to see the return of a fantastic minis game. And man, does it look so cool. The sculpts on this look so good, Robert.
Yeah, they do.
Like, dumb good. Like, take my money.
Yes, yes. So Privateer Press has announced that Monsterpocalypse is coming back. So they say it's going to come out the fall of 2018. So what does that tell you, Jonathan?
It's going to be a Christmas release.
Gen Con. It's always Gen Con.
It's always Gen Cons.
Now, they're doing something different this time around. The original game was it came pre-painted. This time, what they're going to do is they're going to release it as model kits like, you know, every other miniatures game. So, like, I don't want to call it a normal miniatures game. I don't know what kind of, like, it's Star Wars Legion and War Machine and Warhammer. I don't know what genre that is. It's not collectible. It's
miniature wargaming?
It's I don't want to say plain old miniature wargaming, but I guess it's plain old miniature wargaming. But I love it. I love it because the models they're making are, they could be a lot more interesting because you don't have to be at the whims of the medium that you have to cast them in. Secondly, you get to paint them yourselves, and I love painting. And I know that's going to turn some people off, and I'm sorry. They're not going to come pre-painted anymore. You got to paint them yourself. But the new sculpts look real good.
Oh, those sculpts look so good, Robert.
Especially that big giant robot, right? Yeah. Have you seen the original big giant robot?
I have. You showed them to me. You got me all excited about it, and then you told me that it kind of gone by the wayside.
But yeah, Monsterpocalypse, I'm interested. The original game, dude, it has had such a weird history, and I wish it was written down somewhere because I've been able to like piece it together, but there's like a lot of innuendo and rumor about like why it went away because of movie rights, and then Team Covenant got involved, and it's just kooky. But whatever, reboot. We're at a new point in our lives with Monsterpocalypse, so we'll just start there. And I'm sad we don't live near each other anymore because I would totally split a starter with you.
There's nothing that says that we can't. All right, and next up, some magic news, Robert.
Basically, what's interesting about the story is not the story in itself, but what Wizards is doing about it. So Wizards, there was a article going around that was Chinese, and people were translating it, probably using Google Translate, so it probably had a whole bunch of fun phrases in it. But it was the release notes for the new set Dominaria, and what release notes are basically kind of describes about a third of the cards and interesting rules and interactions they have and whatnot. And it was, I think, supposed to be an article that they were going to release leading up to the weeks preceding Dominaria being released, not, you know, the months, because this came out about 2 months before it came out. And so this is what's interesting. This stuff got leaked and Wizards found themselves in the seat of what to do about it, right?
Yeah.
You know, do you acknowledge it? Do you not acknowledge it? So what they did was they said, okay, they just came out and said, like, yeah, that's real. It is real. And because we don't want people getting this article and translating it and maybe reading into things poorly translated that aren't there, they just released it all the heck early. And they said, here you go. This is it. We're like, we're not, you know, this isn't exactly how we wanted to release this. We're not going to have it with accompanying art and all that because we just don't have the time to put it together like we would if this was normal. But we're just doing it and we're going to just adjust. You know, it's not the first time that Wizards has had to deal with this stuff with Magic where something gets leaked. And lately, instead of just pretending it didn't happen, which is like a trend I see a lot of companies go for, you know, when something gets leaked, it's like, oh, that didn't happen. Everything's fine here. Everything's, how are you? You know, they go like, yeah, okay, it leaked. It's okay. We'll just deal with it. So yeah, they released the release notes about the new set months ahead of time. So about a third of the cards got spoiled with their entire rules text, you know, 2 months before the set's going to get released. And it's interesting to see a company handle a leak that way where they acknowledge it and they just sort of release the leak for everybody and, you know, sort of, yeah, like kind of have to just alter their plan. And they had this really lengthy article, which I will link in the show notes, about how they're going to handle it and what the new release schedule for their articles that they had queued up for this is going to be. And yeah, you know, I Wizards is just kind of handling it well. You know, they're like, it sucked, it got out, but you know what? Whatever, we'll just deal with it.
You know, I know people want that information, but you know, half the fun of a new set on a CCG is seeing what's in it. Like, these leaks make me frustrated. Like, I don't like it. Stop leaking stuff.
I think this one was unintentional. I think they had the article queued up and it just went live because somebody didn't get the memo right or something. You know, I think this was more of a snafu than somebody being sneaky.
But you know, this isn't the first time they've had a leak issue. And
that's
oftentimes
true.
It's just, I don't know, it just makes me frustrated. Like, it just, have the fun, the adventure of opening packs and not knowing what you're going to get. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, but you gotta admit, man, the hype machine is the hype machine. Regardless, Wizards just acknowledges it and just tries to move on and doesn't pretend it didn't happen, which, I don't know, man. Like, I gotta say, a company acknowledging that a leak happened and just saying, okay, fine, if you guys want to know this is bad, here you go. And then they do preface it with, if you want to not know this, please do not click on the link at the bottom of this article that's going to give away the farm. You know, so they did go into that. But yeah, no, it's, you know, it makes it more enticing to leak in a weird way if you know, the company kind of pretends it didn't happen, and then it makes the company kind of look weird and foolish, you know. And I see so many companies do this. You know, just say whatever. Okay, we screwed up, or somebody screwed up, or whatever. Although I will say in this case, it worked, because a lot of the Magic people are like really into the set, Jonathan. They are so, yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm glad that people are really into it. That makes me happy, but still, I just enjoy the excitement, enjoy the surprise. That's half the fun. Well, now on to a little bit of WizKids news.
Yeah, WizKids has announced a board game called The Heroes of Dominaria, speaking of Magic. It's going to MSRP for $60 or $80 for the premium edition with four painted minis, which sound like four painted planeswalkers. It's going to have four playmats, 16 hero tokens, 24 site tokens, 32 leyline tokens, 150 mana tokens, one turn tracker, 20 cabal tokens, 15 artifact tokens, 20 mana site tokens, 50 Dominaria cards, 45 quest cards, 10 public quest tiles, 20 artifact cards, and a two-part organizing tray that fits inside the box.
I like your token description.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm glad that they're expanding that universe. It deserves more stuff. Like, I love what they do with D&D, you know?
Yeah,
with
yeah.
The board game that matches the current publication cycle. Mm-hmm, and those are generally come out pretty darn well, and they're pretty fun. So this is cool. This is cool. I'm totally down.
It sounds like it's at least semi-co-op, because one of the things all the players are doing is fighting the Cabal, you know, but I think players might have their own agendas too. But yeah, it sounds like an interesting board game, you know, and that's like a Fantasy Flight level of tokens right there. So it's going to be a board game, you know. It's not going to be like, oh, this is just like one of those things where they just slap the Magic title on it and call it a Magic game. It's like, no, this sounds like a board game. You don't have like 60 billion tokens and not actually have a legit board game, you know.
Indeed, indeed.
All right, Jonathan, so throw some bites on me.
All right, you ready for some news bites? We're going to start off with Terraforming Mars, a game that you and I both really enjoyed. They are coming out with a digital edition.
Go on.
Yeah, I know, right? Right? It's expected to be released in Q2 of 2018. It's going to be on the Windows platform. It's going to be on Steam specifically,
it says. Say iOS. Say iOS. iOS.
So it's going to be on the Windows platform, specifically through Steam.
Anything else?
So it's going to be on the Windows platform.
No!
Oh, no, I do have some good news for you.
Oh.
I was just looking at a very specific part of the article. No, it's going to be available on Steam, Android, and iOS platforms.
Yay! Wait, we both have giant iPads. If we both got it, could we play each other?
Yes, because there's going to be online pass and play local multiplayer, online multiplayer, single player against the AI. It's good stuff. And it's even going to have the single player variant of the game.
Ooh.
So I am down with this. I think this is fantastic. I think this is going to be a really, really, really cool game. And I think putting it on a tablet really makes a lot of sense. I think this is going to translate really well.
Nice.
I'm excited about this. That's good news.
I need another bite. I need another bite. I hunger. I hunger for more bites.
All right. Well, that was just your little first bite. Now it's time to move on to your next bite. We are getting a Sonic the Hedgehog game. From IDW. Sonic the Hedgehog Crash Course. It's got pre-painted minis, Robert. You're going to get Sonic, you're going to get Tails, you're going to get Knuckles, and there's going to be a Dr. Robotnik.
Say we're getting Eggman, sir. That dude is Eggman.
Dr. Ivo Eggman Robotnik. Oh, yeah, I know his first name.
Too bad nobody in there is the Walrus.
I am the Walrus.
Cuckoo-ca-choo.
Cuckoo-ca-choo. It's going to be rated for 8 and over. It's going to be 2 to 4 players. Really quick game, 30 to 45 minutes. And I love Sonic. I have loved Sonic for a very long time. I will buy this without even thinking twice. I don't even need it to be good. Although it's from IDW and they've made some pretty cool games. So I've got a lot of hope. A lot of hope.
Yeah, you should. IDW is not bad.
So I mentioned to you that I am getting into Star Wars Legion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Fantasy Flight has announced that they are going to be making some game mats for Star Wars Legion. They're 3x3 mats with slip-resistant backs. These first mats are both going to feature desert environments, one centering around a junkyard and the other centering around desert ruins. And from the look of it, they are designed to smash together and make one giant 6x6 playing field.
Nice.
Yes, and what's really cool is those mats already have a lot of environmental features on them, so you can use those for using the cover rules of the game. And I have a bunch of the Star Wars mats, and actually just a bunch of FFG mats in general, because I've got a playmat for Arkham, I've got a playmat for Game of Thrones, and a bunch of stuff for Destiny and stuff. Their playmats are really nice. They're really, really pretty. And finally, are you ready for some quick news bites from the wonderful people over at Gale Force 9? Okay, bite number one. There's going to be an Aliens cooperative board game.
Nice.
Yes! Little Xenomorph minis, little Marine minis. It's specifically Aliens, and it looks makes like sense. It's going to be co-op, and take my money.
I will take your money.
So, that's $50 that I'm going to owe Gale Force 9 real soon. Then I'm going to owe him another $50, because they are teasing the living daylights. They haven't given us any detail yet. It's going to be Dungeons & Dragons, a new board game from Gale Force 9.
Yeah, we covered that in the last one, because they said it existed.
Yes, and they have now teased it with a box image, and this box is awesome. It's jet black, and it just has the traditional Dungeons & Dragons logo on it, and that's all. And, like, that's kind of neat. I like it. It's a cool mystery.
I could dig it.
So, apparently, Wizards is going to release the setting very soon, and then we'll know a little bit more about it. So, here's hoping. And then, finally, a game that I own and can't wait to get to the table because it's right up my alley because it's a 4X game and it's in one of my favorite franchises. Star Trek Ascendancy is getting a bunch of new expansions.
Nice.
We are getting the Vulcan High Command.
Okay.
And Prepare to Squee and Andorians.
No, I'm not going to squee.
Really? I love the Andorians.
I'm not an Andorian guy.
Yeah, so Star Trek Ascendancy, getting two new factions, Vulcan High Command, Andorians. I'm totally stoked. I love the Andorians, especially as they were portrayed in the Enterprise series. I thought they did some neat stuff with that race there, so I'm really excited about that. And Vulcans are, you know, they're Vulcans. Like, what's not to love?
I gotta say, I'm more excited about the Vulcans, especially if they come with their ships with little circles.
They do come with ships. See, that's what's the cool thing about the Ascendancy stuff. You get ships, you get space stations, you get new warp lanes, which are how you build the map, and new planets and all kinds of fun stuff. So the game comes with Klingons, Romulans, and the Federation. And then I also bought the Borg, and I bought the Cardassians, and I bought the Ferengi. And so this will give us a total of 8 races, which is amazing.
That could make a very long game.
Yeah, but I think that is fabulous. I'd love to sit down over a weekend and just let it play out for as long as it needs to go. That would be so neat.
That would be very neat.
Now, speaking of expansions, they're also bringing out Doctor Who expansions. Little 2-packs of Doctors.
Okay.
The 5th Doctor and the 10th Doctor are in one. The 2nd Doctor and the 6th Doctor are in another. The 3rd Doctor and the 8th Doctor are in another. And finally, you get the 7th Doctor and the 9th Doctor in another pack. Two Doctors for $20, and you get all of the cool gameplay elements that come along with them. They're diving deep into the Doctor Who history. I think that's great.
Actually, I like the 2nd Doctor. I of the old shows I've watched, I actually thought he was...
Yeah, he's playing a little flute.
I'm back over here looking at Monster Apocalypse minis right now.
No, it's okay. Fair enough. I will be doing the same as soon as I finish with this last little news bite. Firefly Adventures is set to hit retail in March of this year, so right about now. And it's getting 2 expansions.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. I really enjoyed the first Firefly game that Gale Force 9 did. They've really been on a series of hits for me. Like, their games have just been off the charts cool. And so I've really been looking forward to Firefly Adventures. And seeing that it's going to get supported right out of the gate is awesome. I'm really stoked about this.
Yeah, about the only complaint I've heard about Gale Force 9 is just they do those really crunchy games that take a while. Which is, you know, you don't always have time to do it. It's like, I don't always have time to play your awesome games.
Yeah, I know. And that's what Star Trek Ascendancy has suffered from, is because it does have a very long play time. All right, so that's your news bites. Robert, what do you think?
I like the chocolatey flavors, and it's leaving me satisfied, but not overly full, not uncomfortably full. And it burps good, too. So I got to say, that was good bites.
Yeah, and I am currently looking at a picture of Defender X with guard units. And now it's time for the end of our Wisdom of Crowds segment, where we always take a look at the year in the life This is where we go into what we deep dove a year ago, and we have 365 seconds to talk about it again. And if we want to go longer, well, then that means we need to take it off the shelf. So, Robert, 1 year ago, what were we playing?
And Forgot My Dice, episode 15, Hey Dog, I heard you like landmines. We played Mass Mora,
which is just a lovely game. I really enjoy that game.
I have not had the luxury of playing it again because I moved and I'm sad.
Well, I have, and I've even brought in a bunch of the characters from Arcadia Quest and played it with them. And the reason that I keep going back to Mass Mora is not only because it's a great game, but it's also so simple and easy to set up. Because it's the tiles and whatnot, and the dice.
And the dice, yeah.
And so it sees actually a fair amount of playtime in my house, and both my kids really, really like it, and I like playing it with them because it's, you know, it's got enough depth and substance that I can be completely engaged.
I don't know what else to add to that. It uses the Arcadia Quest minis, which are fantastic. They got just the right level of absurdity and seriousness that it just makes it, it just sells it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Robert. I mean, it's a great game. It's a great little package. And the fact that you can bring in all your little Arcadia Quest guys into it is awesome. Like, that totally just really kind of opens up the game for me. Well, that sounds like we're going to need to get that off the shelf when you're here.
There's already four games on that list, Jonathan.
You're going to be here for like 4 days. You don't need to sleep.
I'm going to a wedding. Robert. I'm going to a wedding.
You can sleep through that too. Do you really like these people? I mean, like, really?
I'm a parent of three, man. I need my sleep.
But what I'm asking here is, do you like these people that you're going to the wedding? Like, are they like?
Is it my daughter's going to be a flower girl? I have to be there.
Like, can you sleep? Like, the flower girl's there for like 32 seconds. Then you can rest up for the rest of the games. It's a very walking moment.
Fair, yeah. You sleep for the, and then you have the games.
The games. Listen, Robert, you've got to play. I've got this rising sun in a very uncomfortable place. Robert, that's great. All right. Bad walking impressions aside, we will be back after a short break. And we will be back after a short break with our deep dive of the episode. We love getting feedback, so please let us know how we're doing by doing one of the following.
You can email us at fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com.
You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/fmdpodcast.
We also have Facebook comments enabled for all our posts at forgotmydice.com.
You can also message us or tweet us on Twitter. Find us at forgotmydice.
You can join us on Patreon, where we post outtakes and other bonus content.
And if you like the show, the best way for more people to find out about us is to give Forgot My Dice a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or the Google Store.
Lastly, for those of you who want control to sanction the podcast, pick up your shoe phone and call Agent 82. Chief, it's acceptable to get podcasts on our wristwatches. It won't be distracting.
I just don't even know what's happening right now.
Well, it's classified, Jonathan. I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
Oh, we've got to get these things upgraded from the 1960s. And welcome back. It is now time for our deep dive. And on tonight's episode, we're going to be deep diving Spelljammer. Robert.
Jonathan.
What is Spelljammer?
So Wizards of the Coast at Gamma, they were showing off images from Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes, and in a section that they asked the people there not to photograph, please and thank you, and apparently nobody did because I haven't found an image of it, they showed a picture of a GIF, which is going to be in the book, and there's just been other subtle hints that Spelljammer might be making a return. So that is why we're covering it, because Wizards might make the next D&D story out of it. And I like old D&D settings, so we're going to cover it, because this is half my podcast too, darn it. Meh.
So this is Robert's primer into an AD&D campaign setting under the assumption that it may be making a return soon. Am I kind of mopping that up?
You are quick mopping that up. And we'll have a little bit of fun for the board gamers at the end.
So, Robert, let's talk about Spelljammer. It is, of course, AD&D Adventures
in Space!
Yeah, the cover of the original box set unironically said that. Like, that was a selling point. That wasn't it trying to be, like, kitsch or anything. So, to go with our usual
thing.
Was
In Space bolded and in, like, a much larger font?
No, it was not.
It's unfortunate.
Multitudes of worlds wheel through wild space. The crystal shells that encase them bob and drift in a turbulent rainbow ocean which fills the cosmos. Sturdy merchants, bold pirates, daring explorers venture into the great, unknown vastness of the universe, seeking wealth and adventure.
The Spelljabber game puts you in command of a fantastic ship capable of spanning the tremendous distances between planets. Graceful elven flitters, stately Illithid galleys, deadly beholder tyrants, and the awesome Spelljammer itself carry trade, emissaries, and heroic action throughout all the worlds of the AD&D game.
Yep, that's it.
Nailed it.
So there's a cute story attached to it. Basically, they went to a bar to pitch like story ideas and stuff in Wisconsin, in Lake Geneva. And apparently there were rumors going around that Steven Spielberg was scouting locations for a movie in the area. So they thought, like, you know, these nerds were that, you know, worked for TSR Incorporated were, you know, Steven Spielberg's guys, and that they were in town like pitching movies or something. I don't know. But the setting designer, Jeff Grubb, basically during this meeting had a vision of a, quote, guy in plate mail armor standing on the deck of a ship that was sailing through space. And when asked how the, end quote, and when asked how the guy was breathing, he said, quote, I don't know. We're talking about a world with dragons and magic. Let's just violate the laws of physics to make the picture work the way we want.
Fair enough. I'm down with it.
They didn't have a lot of like sci-fi in the setting initially. They added in lizard men as a playable race, and the Niogi, which are in the Volo's Guide to Monsters, made their first appearance there. But yeah, it was very much just D&D in flying spaceships, where you had a magic item basically that provided propulsion. And then future releases dialed up the sci-fi, where you had the Spacefarer's Handbook introduce the race of Drakons, Dragony Centaurs, the GIF that we talked about, with which GIF, by the way, are hippo men, Jonathan, that are mercenaries and use firearms.
I like it.
And typically wear khakis and monocles, if I remember my art.
Generally
correctly.
Speaking, there's two species that are truly epically terrifying when you turn them into an anthropomorphized version. And I mean this in a good way, not in a bad way. Rhinoceros and hippos.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. GIF for space hippos. So, yeah. And they had Grommans, which are gorilla people, Hadrozes, which are monkey people, Hrawaddy, which are reptile guys, Rastipedes, which are centipede people, which are basically space orcs, and they had Ixachil, I guess. I don't even know how to pronounce that word, but they're bug people who do performance-enhancing surgeries on you and then make your charisma go down five points because I guess you're all scarred and Frankensteined up. And yeah, and then the Monsters Compendiums added in goofy monsters, including, and yes, in second edition, you could get stats for giant space hamsters. It's good stuff.
You know,
it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
I know that you've probably got a fairly strong opinion of this because, you know, we've talked about old RPG systems before. So tell me about your opinions of Spelljammer.
It had a lot of good for it because, like I said, it was kind of trying to be a meta setting and it was kind of ahead of its time in that way. But it kind of failed on a couple of things or on a couple of points. Most of which is it had a novel series where a lot of the fluff that I've been reading about on the internet, it seems to have all been in the book series because I went and found my old box sets for it and like none of it was in there. They made mentions of several historical things, but then, you know, they don't ever say what they are. And I had to find this really complicated timeline online, and the references for it jump around between Dragon magazine articles, the books, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So yeah, there was never like a very concise, this is the setting. It was more of like a toolbox to just have your D&D adventures be in space more than like a setting that you could base adventures in and around, you know, like the hook was just, it's like, yes, you can be a D&D player or a D&D group, but you could be flying around in space, go. And there wasn't anything else, you know, it just gave you all the tools you needed to make that happen and not like a setting to hang it on. I think ultimately like Birthright, which we talked about an episode or two ago, it was kind of ahead of its time just because we didn't have the language we needed to describe it, you know? And, yeah. And I think the two word or the two things you could really build Spelljammer around were, the word steampunk, because I could easily see people throwing steampunk into this and making it work a lot better, just as like a art direction and everything. And then I don't know if you ever saw the Disney film Treasure Planet, but Treasure Planet would work wonderfully as, you know, like that space station. That's the crescent moon. Yeah. And the ships with the photon sails and stuff, yeah, like that would have worked way better. Yeah. And but, you know, they just didn't have that, you know, they didn't have anything to sort of build it on. Like I said, they didn't have like a setting like that cool crescent shaped space station. You know, that wasn't there. All they had was, oh, there's an asteroid with like a city on it. Go. They put too much time in like the rules concepts of how to make the Grubbian physics work and not enough time into giving you a place to actually do stuff in. So that I guess that would be my complaint. I guess it's a very just old school, like, you know, it's a second edition thing because it came out kind of early in second edition. But yeah.
But it has created a bit of a legacy, right?
Yeah, it came back in. They did an issue of Dungeon Magazine, Dungeon 92, from what I found, where they brought it back, sorta. It was only in the Forgotten Realms sort of universe. They didn't, you know, touch on any of the other stuff, but they gave you kind of everything you needed to play. So if you're a fan of the original, you could just, you know, port that into third edition and go. In fourth edition. In the Manual of the Planes, they had two really lame references to spell jamming stuff. And in the beginning of the book, in the back of the book, they basically said that you could use a spell jammer vessel to sail the seas of the astral plane. And then they had the actual magic item in the back and how it functioned and, like, you know, how many astral diamonds it costed or whatever. But I think that's like the biggest miss of that book, because it's like there were like the bones of a campaign setting they just kind of didn't quite get. I think there's something there where, okay, so okay, hear me out, Jonathan. Imagine a D&D world, right? Where you take kind of in a world that's a lot like Treasure Planet. So imagine a Treasure Planet, right? Like all of that stuff.
You lost the voice.
So imagine that.
Do it right!
Imagine a world like Treasure Planet.
Much better.
Where you have a world below that you don't even really pay attention to. And then when you get up to the heavens are literally the heavens. And so if you have a spell jamming vessel, you can set sail in the astral sea. And instead of your ports of call being, you know, like Casablanca and Rome and whatever terrestrial stuff, like your ports of call are like Asgard and Olympus and all that. And you do sort of like a flying space pirate game where the different nations or countries are like the big, broad mythological worlds, you know, like the Olympus and Asgard and the abyss and all that. That's like, there was kind of something like there. That. Yeah, there's something there, but they never did anything with it. So
I have to tell you that every time you said set sail.
Yeah.
I got that stupid Enya song stuck in my head.
Sail away, sail.
That's the one. That's the one. That's the one. We can't afford the royalties.
But yeah, that's basically it. And like, they had really goofy physics. Where basically, if you went into space, you just sort of carried an envelope of air with you, and the more weight you had, the more air you took. So you didn't have to worry about breathing, but your air could go bad eventually.
Did they have canned air, like Perrier?
No, they did not.
That's a pity. I feel like there was an opportunity there.
And then gravity aligned itself, basically, like where. You know, like the quote-unquote center of gravity on a person? That would also be your center of gravity, and so wherever that line was on your ship. If you were above that line, you just sort of went down towards it. And if you're on the other side of it, you went up. So like if you had like a normal like sailing vessel with a spell jamming helm on it, like the first two decks, you would walk on them normally. But then the decks, like the bottom decks on the bottom of the ship, you'd probably be upside down. It's really hard to describe without like a picture.
I'm down.
But yeah, it was just a goofy setting. But Jonathan, so based on everything I just told you about Spelljammer, I'm going to put you on the spot. Pitch me a board game based off of the Spelljammer ideas, and it cannot be a war game where you're doing like battles because they already.
No, we don't need a war game.
Set.
We don't need a war game.
Okay, go.
Because let me tell you, you've got so much good stuff that you can pull off of here. I mean, obviously, we're gonna have a pick up and deliver segment to it, right?
Right, traders, yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Because there's, you know, you've got all these different worlds. There's going to be pick up and deliver, and that's going to let you kind of like manage a currency and build an engine. But really what you're trying to do is gain the favor of the gods, all these different gods. And you're going to do that by, you know, doing a combination of worker placement and pick up and deliver, and then basically satisfying the demands of these different gods on these different lands. And, you know, whoever gets the most, for lack of a better term, god points is going to win.
There you go. See, I like it.
No space combat.
Yeah, no space. Yeah. Space combat's done. They did it in the box set. So anyway, but that's it. If you want to know more about Spelljammer, everything that they ever made for it is on DriveThruRPG. And
no, Robert,
I will
say it the right way.
What?
Would you like to know more?
Yes, Jonathan. Thank you.
You're welcome. Use this voice the rest of the episode.
Well, I will put us out of our misery then. Everything of Spelljammer is on DriveThruRPG. And then you could go to www.spelljammer.org for the fan site that they set up after they canceled the setting when they transitioned to third edition. It's still up. There's a wiki. I think that's where I found the really, really complicated timeline. And yeah, it's a good site. So there you go. That's it. That's Spelljammer in a nutshell. We'll see if it's the story. They should.
It's we nutty. Should find... I like that. I like how absolutely, you know, ridiculously nutty it is.
It is really ridiculous and nutty. Do you know what the Nyogi are? Do you know what they look like?
No.
Okay. Imagine a moray eel, right? You got that in your head?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, give it a scraggly, like, old man wizened sage's beard.
Like Lao Pan and...
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, sometimes they have them, just
so
the bottom...
So you got the Big Trouble in Little China evil guy beard.
Not the top stash, but the bottom stash. Sometimes they depict him with bottom hair.
So the low pan bottom stash.
Yes.
Got it. All right.
Okay.
On a moray eel.
On a moray eel.
Is his name Franklin?
No.
That's unfortunate. All right, keep
going. And it has spider's legs.
Oh! And they're coming out of the eel body?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not okay with that. Is he wearing clothing?
And they do have spider butts. They do have spider butts.
So he's got the big bulb.
Yeah.
The spider legs.
Yep.
But the center's all a moray eel?
Yeah. Tony, do you know who Tony Ditzerzi... I can't pronounce that guy's name. Famous guy, Tony Ditzerzili. Here, look at this thing I'm sending you.
Oh my gosh, that is not okay. That is literally a nightmare.
Yeah.
God, that really genuinely is upsetting. That is an unsettling image.
Yeah, they're evil monsters. They're gross.
Yeah, that's kind of like the worst parts. It crawls on walls and it can reach you through the cracks.
Yeah, and it's got like gill slit. Yeah, they're just gross. It's great. Ooh, I found another gross picture on the internet. They're the big bats.
Oh, good God, what the hell are those?
it's the egg sacs and the little baby Nyogi.
The little baby nightmares. And they've got the little arms like those aliens out of Warhammer.
Yeah, the Tyranids. Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah.
Those things are just like a combination of all the things I don't want in my life.
Yeah, moray eels are creepy.
Yeah, they really are. I've seen them diving a couple times. They are just very creepy.
They're the reason I don't swim in the ocean anymore, because I walked in at SeaWorld, I think it was San Diego, I think the one I was at. They have a moray eel room, and there were just tons of them staring at you, and I was so creeped out. I'm like, I can't even be in the same space that these things exist in now. Like, if there's one at a fish store...
But they're not everywhere, man. They're not everywhere.
I know, but like if there's one in a fish store, I'm like, right, that's it. I'm never looking at fish here again. I can't deal with it.
No, they don't really do well in captivity. Yeah. Unless you got like a big
well,
tank.
But they have the little... There's those little eels that look like... I just...
But they're not morays.
But it doesn't matter. They're eels. I can't be in the same space with them. I just can't. And an eel that could walk on land and has spider legs, like, I'm done. That's nightmare fuel. It's over.
Yeah, no, that is nightmare fuel. I fully... you should make that the image at the top of the post.
Speaking of licenses we can't afford, maybe I'll have to draw one.
We're just gonna let this happen. I want all of our listeners to know what our nightmares look like.
Walking spidery moray eels.
There you go. Those things are just genuinely unsettling. Yeah. Those are just not okay.
Yeah. Like I said, most of the original box set was mostly D&D
in space. In space.
But yeah, then they had the Nyogi, and it was like, oh yeah, no, it's over.
That is all about Spelljammer. It like all these old settings, it's a little bit loopy, but really, really cool.
Yeah, and that's why I hope they tackle it, because using the modern thing of having, like, you know, an actual setting.
Oh, fifth edition is primed for this sort of thing.
Yeah, but not just doing it as a toolbox, actually giving it a setting that you could do stuff with, because that was its big problem. It didn't have much to do. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the episode, which is always my saddest time. So, Robert, do you have any final thoughts?
No, Jonathan, but do you have any final thoughts? Ah, I turned it around on you.
Yes, I do happen to have some final thoughts, Robert. We have an awesome listener named Brendan, who we've talked about on the show before, and he actually has started a podcast of his own.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And it's awesome. It's called Pick Up and Deliver. I've listened to the first couple of episodes. He has a really unique kind of take on games. He really gets into the nitty-gritty of gameplay elements. He breaks them down, you know, kind of what's going on in the middle of it. And it's been a fascinating listen, and I'm really enjoying it.
Nice. My so, final thoughts are, behold, a GIF.
Oh, he's epic!
A flintlock and admiral medals on a hippo body, and he's got a monocle. Right? Is that not steampunk? We just didn't have that word back then.
He's definitely a Reginald something bottom. Reginald Trufflebottom the third. If you want to see a picture of Reginald Trufflebottom the third, we're going to link him in the show notes. Admiral Reginald Trufflebottom the third.
God damn it, get his rank right.
What? I thought, he looks like a Navy man. What is he?
I don't. Oh, they're just amazing. I love GIF.
Yeah, Admiral Reginald Trufflebottom the third. That's his name. That is officially his name and his moniker. We're going to put that in the show notes. Well, that does bring us to the end of another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. Perhaps the loopiest last 10 minutes we've ever produced. Oh, God, what are you saying to me now? Oh, he's great, too. He's so fantastic. Oh, I bet you were not obviously not Admiralty, though. He's definitely a lower rank.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's wearing the khakis, so.
Yeah.
Jonathan, are you Spelljammer man now? Have I sold you?
this guy's name is Trevor Flatbottom. He's lovely. He's just delicious. I need this in my life. Please send more. All right. So if you want to see what a GIF is, go ahead and take a look at the show notes. Yeah, maybe we'll have to post some of these after we post the episode on Twitter or whatnot.
The Facebook group, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. You can run a naming contest for the GIF. All right, well, that brings us to the end. Did you send me another one? We're never going to end. Ah! That's not all right! Oh, man. Those things are just not okay. This one's furry. That is... No Niogis. No Niogis.
Evil... I'd hardly call us evil, just call us men of business, mind slave.
All right, well, as always, join us again in another 2 weeks when we have another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. And until then, Robert, party on.
Party on, Jonathan.
I need more gifts in my life. Those guys are great.
The music you heard in this podcast was Intro by Elephiel and Retro Funk by Persephone, both used with permission via the Creative Commons license.